From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
It's the Real World of Money with Andrew Goss. Once again, here's Patrick.
Once again. Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone. Come on in and join us. We've got some interesting emails. Join the email. We don't have a lot. And you can use a telephone, but nobody does anymore. 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Well, as you know, I think the healthcare thing, Andrew Goss, is about a $3 trillion a year deal, right? So
right.
There's a lot of people. I mean, this is just... So we thought we would just play for you and everybody Warren Buffett's take on this, and then maybe we'll talk about it a little bit. Here.
Something that affects all businesses is the cost of health care in this country, and you've been vocal about that. You've argued that right now, I mean, in effect, that the cost of paying for health care can affect a company even more than taxes.
Well, it does. I mean, in terms of our competitiveness in the world, health care in 1960 was 5% of GDP, and there's only 100 cents in the dollar. So it's gone from 5% to 17%, and it keeps going up. Corporate taxes have gone down from 4% to 2%. So corporate taxes are way less of a factor in American competitiveness than I'm talking about overall business. Than medical costs.
And as we sit here today in Omaha, the Republicans in Congress are madly trying to figure out what to do to replace Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. Do you have a firm idea in your mind of what ought to be done about Obamacare? Everybody acknowledges there have been some problems with it.
I think that's way outside of my circle of competence. But I would I would say this: you can't have that 5 go to 17. And move on to 20 and 22 or 24%, because there are only 100 cents in the dollar, and healthcare is gobbling up well over $3 trillion a year. It's just about the same as the federal budget. I mean, it's getting up there.
Are we now at the point where the country does need to think about some sort of single payer system some form or another?
With my limited knowledge, I think that probably is the best system, because it is a system. We are such a rich country, in a sense we can afford to do it. But in almost every field of American business, it pays to bring down costs. There's an awful lot of people involved in the whole the ecosystem works, that there's no incentive to bring down costs.
And it sounds like you're saying with a single payer system, it'd be easier to figure out a way to get those costs down.
It'd be more effective, I think.
Well, so single payer system. What does that look like, Andrew?
Take the Medicare Act and you remove the words over 65.
Over 65. So in other words, you would go to, I guess you go, you know, you'd pay so much.
A basic level of minimum care. Yeah.
So what, that's just too simple?
Yeah. Listen,
I don't understand.
It's the administrative cost.
There must
costs.
Be so much force and money behind this.
Oh, yeah.
No wonder they can't get anything.
Well, if you look at just the insurance companies to begin with. So let's assume you did this. Let's call it Medicare, because it's already there.
It's Medicare.
So if you extended Medicare all the way down the scale. Right,
20 every, years old. What, 18?
Every person.
Okay.
Every person covered by this basic Medicare.
Okay.
Right? All right. So now the insurance companies have lost a great big part of their market. The only people they can sell insurance to now are people that where you say, oh, well, Medicare, like they do now, right? You have Medicare, but there's these uncovered supplemental insurance.
Sure.
And, you know, you have this basic one, and then you have this better one, and then you have the best one, and then the best one, and so on, right?
And the people that could afford it, they could pay it.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And then they
and the
go
people
get
that couldn't would at least have basic medical care.
Right. Okay. I'm with you so far.
Okay, so the administrative costs in the medical industry, insurance, and all those, what did he call them, ECHO, the ECHO people, is 25%.
Out of the $3
trillion? 25% of that $3 trillion is just administrative. It's not even anything to do with your health care.
Wow.
It has everything to do with administration and bonuses and payments to...
whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. If you eliminate that enormous bite, and if you look at Medicare, what they spend on administrative costs, now, people believe that it's the worst of the worst, right? If you let government do something, they're going to be far less efficient. But how is it that, I mean, they can run the system on less than 4%?
So administrative costs, Medicare.
Yeah. Hmm. So,
it's a pretty well-run system.
Relatively. So if you can put a system in place that knocks out 20% of your $3 trillion in administrative cost, and at the same time leave private enterprise capital to form, to create supplemental insurance plans, I think you'll get everyone's cost of insurance back in line.
Hmm. But if you did...
And this, charge for it.
Yeah.
But if you did
a Medicare thing for kids over 18, just do like you're suggesting, you'd have to get more each paycheck from everybody, wouldn't you?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Which is okay, as we do now.
Yeah, just so you'd...
you'd probably have to increase the payroll deduction for Medicare. It's a line item already on your payroll.
Just raise it.
So, take a point of my paycheck each week, mm-hmm. and put that into a fund that pays for Medicare.
But now with Medicare, I've never used it. So, it doesn't pay everything, right?
No, that's right.
Okay,
it's catastrophic insurance, which is what a great many people from 18 to 35 really need.
Yeah, but these people, they want to be able to go to the doctor and get their Lexapro, Oxycontin, and have it paid for. Come on.
Oh, and don't forget, you got to get some anti-constipation.
Yeah, whatever.
Opiate-induced constipation is a big problem.
Or Viagra, right? Or statins.
Sure.
This is what people want paid, because this is the $3 trillion.
Yeah.
That's what makes the $3 trillion, all this nonsense stuff.
Yeah, you're right about
that. So think about that, Andrew Goss. Big picture. $3 trillion. Hold on a second. Yeah. $3 trillion.
Yeah.
And you look at the numbers, and we have one of the worst records of people sick and their health, overall health is one of the...
And the side effects.
On the side,
don't forget the side effects,
so the thing
like opioid addiction.
So broken, I can't even believe it just keeps growing.
Yeah, and they keep fixing it. It's the typical treat the symptom mentality.
Sure. Yeah.
That now that they're treating the symptoms so deeply that a new symptom
they
has
can't
now
even get
popped
out.
Up.
Yeah.
Now it can't get out. That's why repeal. Nobody said anything about repeal and replace.
Just repeal it.
They just said repeal it. That's your job. Repeal it. Not replace it with something else. Repeal it. So you made it so that those that can afford health insurance now can't. And those that couldn't afford health insurance before don't get it.
Right.
It's like, what on earth? Because there are no exchanges, there's no place where you can get it. So I don't know how the current system can be fixed except to just break it. That's it. It's done. Repeal.
Well, that's what the president keeps saying.
Again.
Why don't we just do anything and just let it crash and burn?
Yeah.
And so what were you saying about a DO? You were going
to... Well, I mean, there are... That's to the medical field,
doctor,
right?
Osteopath. Yeah.
DO as opposed to an MD,
uh-huh.
who are a little more holistic when it comes to treating your ills and symptoms. They take a lot more in nutrition and understand the role that food plays in your in your health. And they're willing to look at things that a typical MD won't, where he just or she whips out the prescription pad and just, boop, boop, here's your prescription.
Right.
Go fill it. Oh, well, I took this, and now it's given me this symptom. Oh, here, we have a pill for that. Take this one to deal with that symptom, and it just cascades upon itself.
That's the problem.
Yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
So I guess no matter what they decide to do with this, It's just gonna still be a mess until the model is changed. And
right.
What's the chance of that with Big Pharma, FDA? Oh, it's just not gonna,
Well, the better living through chemistry is, sort of.
Yeah, that's there, man.
Yeah, and so, right now, when people are given these drugs and are not fully exposed to the side effects, and in fact, should be required, in my view, to sign a waiver I understand that I'm taking this medicine that you just prescribed to me and that it might cause me this problem and that problem. And if it does, I'm totally on my own.
Oh, I like that. No, yeah.
You know, I just get your patients to sign that, you know, reveal to them the complications of this medicine and get them to sign that. And a great many people, I mean, I've heard people say to me, well, I've been diagnosed with cancer, but I'm not going to get the chemo and the radiation. Mm-hmm. And so there are people out there willing to make that decision. What on earth thinks, you know, they shouldn't be able to make the same decision for these so-called, you know, routine drugs
yeah.
that are, in fact, just as big an offender as some of the more deadly prescriptions.
And with each passing day, research comes out, and there's starting to be some doctors speaking out.
There should be.
That all these different tests are just making the problem worse. They've looked at all this mammograms and stuff for
sure.
breast cancer,
yeah.
and they figured out that it just made the problems worse. They were going in and going after things that were not really a problem that would have went away on their own.
Correct.
You know, they see these little bumps or something like that, yeah. and they say, oh, yeah. we should cut this out.
Oh, we're going to go in there with a knife.
Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man.
Yeah, not me.
Boy.
No.
Stay out of there, boy.
Yeah, yeah. No, this hospital, that's no place for a sick person.
No. 888-663-6386. It's the Real World of Money. Patrick, are you going to meet Andrew next Wednesday, July 5, just after the 4th? I'm sure all your listeners would want you to. I think so, right?
Yeah.
We have plans to be here.
Of course.
Why would we not?
Why not?
Oh, exactly. I guess.
You know what? Even if it fell on the 4th.
We'd probably do it.
I'd still do a show. Yeah. I think nothing more patriotic.
Yeah.
I could celebrate America in the other 22 hours of that day. Thank you.
So, yeah, we'll be here next Wednesday.
Yes.
Now, is this a whole long weekend thing that people are
doing? Oh, some people are doing
crazy. So they're
going
to go Friday to Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Oh.
And, you know, Wednesday. We're not feeling so good from what we just did Tuesday.
We might not.
We might just skip out Wednesday.
Too many hot
and
dogs. Yeah.
Since the week's already half over, let's just go ahead and skip Thursday and Friday. We'll see you Monday.
Wow.
Yeah, especially government work.
Yeah, boy, I bet you that's going to be. Yeah, so we will definitely be here. I thought we would publish the complete text of the Declaration of Independence next Tuesday. And I don't know the last time you
Wednesday.
Read it. Wednesday.
Tuesday.
Yes, I don't know the last time, listener, that you've read that, but it's a pretty stirring document.
Oh, my favorite one
is
the Bill of Rights
yeah.
compared to the Communist Manifesto.
But you don't want to do that.
Yes, we do.
Spoil your day?
No, I think that's a good way to start the day.
Ooh.
You know, you can read the 10 planks of the Bill of Rights, right? The 10 bills of rights.
Right. Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
Bills of Rights.
So you get the 10 Bill of Rights. I'll get the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto, and we'll compare. And then you tell me which system we're operating under.
Oh, man. Mm. Don't let your homeschool kids do this, you know?
Yeah. Well, don't let them miss the show.
All right, we'll do that.
Yeah. Make sure your homeschool kids are in for that one because, you know, the harsh reality of it will be revealed next Wednesday morning.
Okay, we'll do it. I'm going to do the bill.
10 Bill of Rights.
I'm going to do the bill, and you're going to get the commies?
I'm going to get the Communist Manifesto right out of my little red book.
Okay, and we're going to do the comparison thing. That'll be fun. In case you don't know who Andrew is, he buys and sells gold coins for a living. He has a company, SDL. They've been around over 30 years, right, Andrew?
Yeah.
Yeah, and offices in...
Actually, 36 years,
36
July
years.
34th.
Wow. Hawthorne, New Jersey, and also Hilton Head at SDL Inc., usgoldcoins.com. And that's what he does, just real American money.
Yeah.
So I wanted
only.
I wanted to go back to this and thing and say, like, how would you deal with something like this? So somehow we came up with this nickel that we talked about, which is pretty cool, in 1866. And I went on ngccoin.com, and I see... There's an 1866 nickel, and if you get a 61 rating, right, MS-61, that's worth $335.
Correct.
But if you get an MS-66, it's worth $4,800.
How about a 67?
Oh, they don't even have 67.
Yeah, you have to adjust the... Yeah, because coins above 66 and that are going to be
pretty... So what does that mean,
rare.
MS?
Mint state.
So they have a rating for all coins.
Yeah, from 1 to 70.
One?
And here's
Wait a minute.
Why,
there, you can go all the way down to one?
All the way to one, yeah.
You couldn't even see the stuff on there, right?
That's right.
Okay.
And then all the way up to 70.
Okay.
Both of which are really theoretical coins. You know, a one is a pretty rare coin. You can barely tell what it is. It'd
probably be worth money if you had one, right?
Right. Okay. No, I do have collectors who are making the worst graded sets, you know, the worst graded coins.
So if I wanted to buy one of these, would you have one?
No. It's not like a...
You don't have one in your drawer?
It's not like a supermarket. No. Okay. Uh-uh. No, you have to
Do
wait.
Do you have any of these?
No.
Wait a minute.
An 1866 shield nickel. Wait, I take it back. I do have a few pieces, but they're like XF 40 to 45.
How much would they be worth?
AU 50. Not a lot. 150 to 200 bucks.
You really? Know,
they're not expensive. So, but, and this is why this NGC is so important.
Yeah.
That if you take my word for it that it's a 40, yeah, I'm a nice guy. I'm on the radio every Wednesday, and I've been doing this 36 years. Yeah. But if you take my word for it, then you risk the rest of the marketplace not accepting my numerical grade. Oh, Andy said it's an XF40. Well, NGC says it's a 30. So you just lost 10 grading points and the corresponding money. Mm-hmm. So I urge I insist, I will not offer a rare coin to a customer unless NGC has already graded it and told me what the grade is. So that is like rule number one. Now, to be fair there, I could sure make a whole lot more money if they would just let me grade them. But that's not what provides safety for the average coin consumer, shall we call them? Mm-hmm. So if you're going to buy a coin that's rare, like this lovely shield nickel in 66, 1866, and mint state 66, it's just the coolest coin. I like the 78 date myself and the 77, but that's just me. So everyone has their what they think are good investment coins. And the other nice thing that NGC will tell you is the population. If you, in the upper right corner of that page, there's a dollar sign and then a graph symbol. If you click on the graph symbol, it'll change the chart to how many coins are there. So, wow, look at this. There's only two better than this 66. Now you see why it's worth $4,000, because it's among the finest known in the world. But you don't want to pay $4,000 for a $300 coin. So you definitely want to make sure, if you're buying a rare coin and you're finally convinced that this is a good place for some of your investment money, do not buy a coin unless it's been graded by NGC. And I say that because there are also, you know, non-NGC. The other guys, there are other grading services out there that are more liberal and more dealer oriented and so forth. Collectors respect NGC because of their non-biased stance. If I went to NGC tomorrow and took a job as a coin grader, you know, I could never buy another coin or sell a coin as long as I'm working for NGC.
I'll be done.
Yeah. So they eliminate the bias, which is the tendency to grade your own coins more liberally than you might somewhere else. So when a coin comes into NGC to get graded, the graders don't know who sent it. So it could be the most sophisticated collector or the, you know, least connected person in the entire business. So they are completely non-biased. When the Smithsonian chose someone to look over their collection, it was NGC. When big collections are brought to marketplace, NGC is the go-to grading service.
I'm just kind of flipping around. This really kind of, I can see how you could get very interested in this. This is so cool because of the history.
Yes.
So I'm looking at some 1860-61 gold dollars during the Civil War.
Yeah, look at the 1865.
Yeah, 1865. So, 1865, okay. Yeah, what about them?
The gold dollars.
You like those?
The end of the Civil War, very low mintage.
Yeah.
1864.
One of these, if it's a MS-68, they said it's worth $52,000.
Yeah. Show me an AU-50 or an MS-68, and I'll get you the $52,000, no question.
So if somebody went here and they had one of these coins, I'm curious of how close would you be as a buyer to this number they see on NGCcoin.com?
Well, the rarer the coin, the closer I am. Meaning, especially if you have the only one.
Well, yeah.
You're pretty much driving the bus when it comes to how much it is.
Really?
So this gives you an indication, and probably auction records, although for that particular coin, that might be rare. I mean, that's a legitimately rare coin. So might not at auction once every 10 years.
It's really curious how the quality goes up so dramatically in value. For example, we have a 1868 here gold dollar, the MS-63.
Grant was president.
It's only a couple grand.
Yeah.
And then if you go up to MS-68, which is really cool quality, they're up to $40,000.
That's right.
Isn't that interesting?
And again, you know, the higher the price, the more the coin is worth in reality. So the rarer it is, the farther away you get from the price guide. I've seen things sell for double the price guide because they're so rare.
Really?
So it gives you an indication, though. I'll tell you what. I mean, if somebody's offering you a coin and it's way off the price guide, you better ask why, because there's a fundamental reasoning behind this thing. And it has to do with how many auction records there are and what you could actually buy a coin for. I mean, if you, like you just said with that particular, whichever one it was, 1866 shield nickel in 66, you have to find the coin. You can't buy it from the price guide. So, you know, it's only helpful when there's an actual price or coin in the mix. If there's not a coin in the mix, you're kind of just theoretical because no one's going to sell it to you.
Mm-hmm. Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, it is the Real World of Money. Come on and join us, June 28th. This is Carolyn. She's out in Crestline, California. She says, we're in our mid-60s and live in Southern California in a mountain resort area. We're self-employed and good health. Real estate values are going up very fast right now. With what is happening with the extended drought, combined with skyrocketing property taxes and other state taxes because California's broke, thousands are fleeing the state yearly.
That's right.
And they're coming to Texas. It's not a friendly business state anymore.
No.
I'm wondering if it would be wise to sell our home, move to a less expensive state, and wait for the coming real estate crash and buy for cash then. I know you believe in other people's money and maxed out mortgages, but with our low income situation, being self-employed, I don't think we can really qualify for another mortgage. Another concern is what to store the dollars in until they find another house. You've always said the goal is not for short-term investment. And since we anticipate the housing market crashing in the next couple of years or so, or maybe earlier, what would be wise? So these are some good questions here.
They are good questions.
Okay, so what do you think there?
Well, first of all, that's the exact model that I'm adopting. You know, the idea that I'm going to stay here in New Jersey while my property values, while there's a demand for property, that once the realization sets in of the demand on the property in terms of property taxes and rising other taxes and then every user fee in the world, then suddenly the growth potential of the house diminishes. And as taxes go up and as regulations go up, the value of the house goes down. So I'm with you. You may have a regional housing crash there and decide to...
Could.
That now's the time to buy.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, don't ask a barber if you need a haircut. Yes, coins are a horrible short-term investment. But if you put your money in gold coins and then you wait... obviously, it's going to have to be a damn good buy before you're going to sell your gold coins in order to buy it. So that alone will put discipline upon you. And you may reach the point where you realize, you know what, my coins are appreciating faster than the rent I'm paying. So maybe being a homeowner isn't all that it's cracked up to be in California. But that third thing, move to Texas. Well, hey,
everybody else is on my list.
So
everybody else.
Yeah. You know, get away from that negative situation. Put yourself in a positive situation. And then on the debt is a blessing question. Having a subsidy account. So if you put a big enough down payment down on your property, whatever it is, you'll take the biggest mortgage that they'll let you take, and put the rest of the money in a checking account to subsidize that. So I don't see the problem there. Maybe you can't have a 95% mortgage, you can't qualify for one, but maybe you could qualify for a 50% or something along those lines to keep your cash liquid enough there, that if in the event of a hard patch, you can draw from your existing account or even sell some of your gold coins to pay the bills if that's what you have to do. Ultimately, that's what they're great for. So, you know, you're asking a guy who buys and sells gold coins for a living where you should park the money.
Like she said in the email, if she's only going to maybe keep the coins for a year or two,
yep,
wouldn't it be better just to buy like bullion coins?
Well, coins that are more closely what we call semi-numismatic.
Semi-numismatic.
Maybe
so
you don't
get anything really fancy.
No, nothing of a very high grade.
I see, like a St.
Nothing
Gaudens
like some of the pieces we were just talking about.
Okay, something that doesn't have a big markup, right?
Yeah, for me, you know, if you like, take a 1 ounce $20 St. Gaudens that has $1,200 worth of gold,
yeah,
and you spend $2,000 for it, it's a nice mint state coin. Yeah, that's reasonable. You're not relying so much upon the collector value as you are upon the fact that if gold goes up, they go up.
So if she paid $2,000 for a nice Gaudens and she sold it in a couple years, it would still be worth at least that.
Yeah, the majority of that money, and that assumes that nothing happens. The gold doesn't go up. That, you know, the demand for saints doesn't go up.
$2,000 is still there.
Most of it. Yeah.
Most of it.
I mean, depends who you buy from. Mm. I've seen those coins on the Home Shopping Network at $2,400.
Yeah, we're trying to cut down on buying.
That's a bit too much. So now, you know, you go to Price Guide's $2,000. You can buy them from a retailer for $2,400, and in reality, if you had to sell them on that same day, you might only get $18. So you want to be sure that what you're paying is not in excess of what the coin is actually worth.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
Which is, again, why the Red Book, the Price Guides, I encounter people every day, Patrick, who have plunked down tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars in hard-earned money and really don't have a clue what the heck they bought. That shouldn't be the case. You average your way in over time, know what you're buying, know what you're paying for, know why it's worth buying. Don't just rely upon somebody else to do all that work for you.
Mm-hmm. Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, it's the Real World of Money. Good to have you here. The Masseys, Richard Massey and Meridian Grace will be here tomorrow on the last Thursday of the month. Come on, enjoy us. Hope you're enjoying the show. ISHRM, 28 June 2017. Here's a little primer on colostrum.
Colostrum is this amazing food, and of course we have it in a powdered form, so it comes kind of like a dried milk, although technically colostrum is not really a dairy product. It is the sort of first food for mammals. It's made where dairy products are made in the body, or it comes from that same place, but it's not really a milk, even though it comes from udders. And of course all mammals produce colostrum, and they produce that colostrum to feed their young mammals. Really love the idea that if we're going to have cows and we're going to milk them, that colostrum becomes the most medicinal part of that whole system. So colostrum in human bodies, it does a lot of different things, but its primary stuff is it keeps the immune system in shape. So when we're using colostrum, it keeps our immune system kind of like going to the gym almost, like keeps it fit so that we can fight off infection. It's one of the things it does really helps us do really well. That's a natural, normal thing for us, but we're living in a world that really breaks our immune system down, so we need immuno-allies. Probably nothing in the world supports our ability to stay antiviral the way colostrum does.
That's a lovely product. We've been taking it for years. Not that that means anything to you, but we have and love it. You can click and order colostrum, and you can order the 1 or 2 kilo containers. Get on the auto ship for the best price. And Easter Thrival link right here, OneRadioNetwork.com. Previously with Stephen Huer and why the uniqueness of One World Way delivers exceptional benefits.
A non-denatured, truly pure, truly raw whey protein will only help to raise glutathione. And when you raise glutathione, you have to remember every cell of the body, your pancreas, your liver, brain, all are dependent upon 10% of the protein content and every cell being glutathione, and makes that cell detoxify itself of heavy metals, chemicals, and whatever drugs. And then that makes the cell healthy. And one of the reasons that you have chronic disease is because the cells of the different organs and bodies are producing too little glutathione. They're succumbing to the free radicals. They're succumbing to the toxins, damaging the function of that organ. And that's one of the reasons why One World Way is so profoundly therapeutically powerful because every cell and every organ depends upon high levels of glutathione. This is the number one food to fuel it over long periods of time is glutathione production.
One World Whey offers four very, very good tasting flavors. Chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, and unsweetened, unflavored. Click and order One World Whey right now on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Broadcasting live, weekday mornings, this is listener-supported One Radio Network. Good morning, this is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, it is the Real World of Money. We're here every Wednesday. Every Wednesday, 9 to 11, sometimes longer than 11, depending on how much material we have and how many tabs I have open. And Andrew Goss is a currency historian. He's got two books, Secret World of Money, Uncle Sam Cooks the Books. How's that third one coming?
Yep, a couple of pages a day. I'm really in it.
Really? Yeah. It's called The Monetary History of the United States?
Yeah, I don't know. That's the working title.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a book by Anna Schwartz and Milton Friedman I found from the 1960s that kind of borrowed that phrase and then put a 1861 to 1964, I think, was the full title. So I may modify the title. But the working title is The Monetary History of the United States.
Uh-huh. Ray wants to know, he said that He's heard that the Federal Reserve bankers, they get all of their orders from the BIS, which in turn get their marching orders from the Financial Stability Board Authority, as per John Titus, filmmaker of All the Plenary's Men.
Okay.
Is that true?
Well, Bank of International Settlements, we talk about them occasionally.
They're like the central banks of central...
Of the central banks,
right.
Yeah. So they are the lead agency in this cartel of central banks around the world.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they would tell who's the head guy in New York now? What's his name?
Jeez, forgive me.
Yeah, I know he's a gold in my slacks guy, but...
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It just doesn't
and
matter.
We know Draghi. He's the head guy at ECB.
Yeah.
So the BIS are some of the boys...
Yes.
The boys, the big boys. You know.
The big, big, gigantic boys. House of Rothschild, to be fair. And, you know, the control that the BIS exerts over the central banks is very subtle. But they publish papers and they clear transactions between central banks. And so they provide guidance. Marching orders a little strong, but more like the drum major or the conductor. That's what the BIS does. It makes sure everyone's on the same page at the same time so that we don't have any global instability.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the boys, the deep state, they control Janet Yellen? Just conjecture?
Yes.
Do they?
Yes. Right.
So do you think that they could actually... have her do stuff that would, really make things bad too, and blame it on Donald Trump.
I see.
I mean, that's where I'm kind of thinking that.
Yeah.
Do you think that's, would they sacrifice Americans to get out their guy that they don't want? That's a dumb question.
Yeah, you know,
of course they would, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I'm thinking they would.
Well, what could she do to do it? I mean, I guess if they would continue to...
Well, let's look at it from the perspective of Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter.
So okay. if your Federal Reserve director is raising interest rates every single quarter until your reelection, your chances of getting reelected are pretty slim.
Which is what they did in the 70s, right?
Yeah,
which is why this is when gold was going up.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, it was the prime period.
Prime period, huh?
So
they didn't like Jimmy.
If your Federal Reserve chairman is working against your president, then you can bet that they're not going to get reelected. The president is going to lose that war.
Okay. All right. So So again, we mentioned last week, and we really need to get an email or a tweet to Donald Trump. He keeps talking about how things, how good things are because the stock market is so high.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's painting himself into a corner here because, I mean, couldn't the boys crash this thing if they wanted to?
Sure.
They could, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just, I mean, I don't know about crash it, but they could go down 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 points, couldn't they?
Yeah, but to me, you know what? Nothing matters except the corporate tax cut. If the president does not get this corporate tax cut from 35 to 15, then all assumptions of growth for this economy are off.
Okay.
Take them off the table.
35 to 50. So in other words, if you have an LLC, chapter...
any kind of pass-through corporation,
kind of
C-corp, whatever.
C-corp, S-corp. Yeah. Right now it's 35 bananas.
That's right.
Woo.
Out of every dollar.
Out of every dollar. Right off the... whatever's left after
expenses.
Whatever's
left after expenses.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so it's 35%, and Mr. Trump is saying he wants to do it to what, 10?
Did you 15.
Say? 15. And you say, if that doesn't happen...
Yeah, then any chance of a robust recovery are off the table. I think the new the new IMF figure for the U.S. shows 2.25% growth.
Right. Right.
2.25, anemic. We need 4.5 and 5 if we have any chance of digging out of this debt spiral. So in order to get to 4.5, 5, you need to increase payroll tax. In order to increase payroll tax, you need more domestic corporate investment, and you need regionalization so that you can tax things that happen outside the country, and at very least, you need border adjustment taxes. What are we calling them now? Tariffs, right. Boy, you're going to send your stuff into this country. You better play fair or we're going to charge a tax.
Of course, what you have going on from the loopy lefts is when you start talking this, their first thing out of their mouth is...
Tax cut for the rich.
Tax cut for the rich because all the rich only have corporations.
That's right.
But it's not necessarily true. I used to have a corporation when I had Timpone's Fresh Foods, right? It was a corporation, so
sure.
I would have benefited from that and could have
everyone with
could have hired more thing
that.
And expanded my spaghetti sauce.
That's
so whatever,
right. That's right. That's
so this is, but this is the whole trickle down idea kind of thing. Not
well.
Really.
Not in this case, not in this case, where you're saying we're going to take the individual income tax,
yeah,
and we're going to cut the top rate. See, that follows the logic of well, you give the money to the richest, and they're going to trickle it down to
right,
the poorest.
Right.
When you cut corporate taxes, which let's be clear here, we collect about $1.4 trillion or more in individual income tax and about $200 billion from corporations.
Not
so they've already found a way to leave the country and do all the things that take their profits offshore. And so the flow of revenue into the treasury from corporations is not the point. The point is, once you charter a domestic corporation, start hiring people, then you increase the payroll tax. That we get 15% of every dollar of payroll right into the Social Security Trust Fund. And we get the individual income tax, which is that $1.4 trillion I was talking about, not even considering the bump in payroll. You see what I'm getting at?
Gotcha.
So that what we pay for is the cut in corporate taxes. What we get in return is an enormous boost in payroll and payroll spending and the type of money that trickles into the treasury into a torrent and starts to allow us the luxury of paying our bills
So I
without
guess,
raising taxes, but just spreading it around.
I guess with the healthcare thing this summer, ongoing Russia thing, but, you know, Paul Ryan says that they're going to get this tax thing done before the end of the year. Well, maybe they'll pull it off, you know.
Yeah, they're going to get Obamacare. They're going to get the Affordable Care Act repealed, too. I don't trust them. I don't trust them. And I don't trust them.
Yeah, I understand. But even if you don't trust Ryan or Trump, at least they would try to get this done.
Okay.
Right?
Great.
Don't you
let
think?
Me see it, let me see it get done.
Yeah, let me see it get
no
done.
No problem. And then, of course, the other thing is our camel's nose under the tent thing as it relates to electronic currencies.
Do you see Google's getting into a blockchain thing, too?
Yeah, everybody's going to hijack the blockchain part. But right now, they're in the way that they're going to deal with the cryptocurrencies is they're just going to redefine them as cash instruments.
Okay, give me an idea of what you mean, because I know they've been talking about it in Germany, because they're concerned about this, you know.
Well, they're just going to call Bitcoin a cash equivalent, like a money order.
Like a money order.
Like cash.
Okay.
So when they're defining what falls into the money laundering category, any cash instrument. So, for example, if you come to me and say, Andy, I was listening to you. I think it's a great idea. I want to invest in coins. Here's $100,000. I'm writing you a personal check.
Right.
No reporting requirement, right?
Right.
There's no reporting requirement on my part.
Because it's a real money, coins.
Yes.
Numismatics.
Correct.
Okay.
But if you came to me with $100,000 in money orders or cash and you said, I want to invest this, well, guess what? Now, if you pay me in greater than $10,000 in cash instruments, suddenly I'm required to fill out a Form 8300 if I find the transaction suspicious, which I would. And second, there's a 1099 required, CTR.
I didn't know that.
Not a 1099, like CTR, a cash transaction report. So they include cash and money orders and things of this nature as a monetary instrument, as a cash equivalent. Then they make a law that says any cash equivalent valued in excess of $10,000 is required to be reported. So if you take these cash instruments onto a plane and you leave the country, you're supposed to declare, I've got more than $10,000 in cash.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're crossing the border into Mexico, you remember we talked about how Bitcoin was being used, right?
Sure.
It's being used so you don't have to have a bunch of Smurfs with suitcases full of $20 bills smuggling them over the border. Now you just put them all in a Bitcoin wallet, smuggle it,
No smuggling involved.
No smuggling involved.
It's a cloud thing or whatever.
Right. Yeah. You go across the border in your nice car and you get to the other side and you've got the cash with you. So the powers that be want to eliminate this. So they're introducing a new combating money laundering, terrorist financing, and counterfeiting act of 2017.
Whoa.
Our famous favorite Dianne Feinstein.
Good for Dianne.
And Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. And essentially what they're doing is increasing the penalties for smuggling cash. So now you get 5 years for doing it. Now they're going to make it 10 years.
Oops.
Right? And they've redefined cryptocurrencies as cash instruments.
Redefine cryptocurrencies as cash instruments.
Correct.
So this is in the works.
Yeah, it's a bill right now.
And it'll get passed and the president will sign it.
In a flash.
In a flash. Okay. So that means, what would that be different for cryptocurrencies as far as growth, risks, rewards?
Well, on the supply and demand side of the equation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anything that hurts demand... Lowers price, right? Anything that
I mean, in common terms, how would this be?
Well, let's put it in common terms then. Yeah. Cryptocurrencies will lose their attractiveness as money laundering instruments.
Well, but money launderies don't pay taxes or anything anyway.
No, they launder their money.
Right.
And so with Bitcoin being used in the smuggling of cash, bulk cash, and they make it a crime to do that. Right now, see, it's not a crime.
Yeah, but so I don't understand. So
if you take $10,000 in Bitcoin,
right,
and you transfer it to someone in Liberia,
right,
there's no crime being committed.
Right.
You haven't done anything wrong.
Right.
But if you do it after this law passes, you've committed a crime.
Over $10,000?
Over $10,000.
Well, they'll just do 99999.
Oh, 20. Sure. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay. So that would be a crime.
Yeah, you can't. Let's see. Today, I guess you can't pay somebody more than 5 bitcoins without. So I imagine your multi-million-dollar transactions that you keep asking, where are they? Who's doing this and why?
Mm-hmm.
They'll disappear because now they're not going to be. You might as well go back to smuggling cash.
but the smuggler bad actors, they don't care anyway. They're breaking the law anyway. What's another law? What do they care?
They're not breaking the law, Patrick. This is what I'm trying to say.
No, they're breaking the law because they're laundering money and the drugs or whatever.
No, yeah.
Some of them. Okay. I kind of hear you, yeah.
Yeah, no.
So this is...
just the first foray into how they're going
to do other stuff.
Yeah, they'll do other stuff.
They'll do other stuff, yeah.
But first defining it as a cash equivalent makes them, now triggers all these reporting mechanisms when people buy things with Bitcoin.
I see.
Export things, import things with Bitcoin. You know, all those money service businesses, all those entities that pop up and offer to, you know, buy Bitcoin from us and we'll transfer it to whoever you want. Uh-huh. You know, all of this concealing the source of the money. In this bill, they make it a crime if you know that these are the proceeds of illegal activity and you still conduct the transaction as a money broker.
We're breaking the law.
Breaking the law.
You can go to the big house, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Make a little rocks out of big rocks.
And then, of course, they give themselves the ability to, in this bill, to freeze bank accounts, which we love that. That's one of their favorite things to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're suspected, boy, they just seize your money right out of the box. Mm. And it also includes these hawalas. I don't know if you've heard about these informal trading networks, and popular in the Muslim community, where you pay somebody in New York $10,000, and then they make a phone call to their friend in Egypt, and your contact can go to see their friend, and he'll give them $10,000. It's called a halwa.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of hawala.
Hawala.
It's an informal transfer arrangement that's very popular in the Muslim community, bypasses banks and does so in a in a means that avoids reporting. And so now will become illegal under this wonderful act that is intended. And, you know, like the Affordable Care Act did everything but make health care affordable. This anti-counterfeiting and I think, combating money laundering, terrorist financing, and counterfeiting act of 2017, it won't do any of those things.
Well, we're shocked.
He should be.